What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Rideshare Rodeo Gig News and Interviews. I'm your host, Steve. Let's get it on. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Rideshare Rodeo Podcast, episode number 341. Appreciate all of you guys always listening. Appreciate all of you audio podcast listeners who will not come over to the other platforms, as I understand, and I always tell you. I get it. I know some of you, have left, but I know some of you still kind of pop on here and there. And today, my guest on the podcast is Sheila. If you are not familiar with Sheila, you will be here soon. Sheila runs a YouTube channel. Its handle is at Dashing in Cyprus, which you can find in all of the show notes or all of the podcast notes that you might be listening to on any pod player. So if you guys are even sometimes on YouTube, I'm going to suggest that, you know, during this conversation or after, you go check out her channel, give a video a like, give a subscribe, and if you like what you see, and check it out. So, hi, Sheila. Thanks for joining the podcast this week.
Hi.
So, Dashing in Cyprus. Obviously, I didn't know till I asked you because I think there's a lot of Cypruses, but you're in Cyprus, Texas.
Correct.
Yeah. So, let's just jump back a little bit because I wanted to even know, like, what's your background coming up to gig economy? And when did you come on? And then we can get on to, like, we can move into, like, the apps you've used or the ones you currently use and your market and that kind of stuff. But just, you know, what were you doing before gig economy?
Sure.
And what brought you into it, you know?
Okay, so I was, most of my career was spent in commercial insurance. I was in the claims department. I was a assistant vice president in the claims department. I had a group of analysts. That was most of my career was in there. I retired from there in 2015, a little bit early because my late husband got sick, and I retired and to take care of him, and he passed away 3 years after that. So 2018, he passed away, and I just really wasn't feeling like going back to work, you know, full time then, and I could afford not to, so I kind of just stayed and just kind of didn't go back to work. And then, you know, the pandemic came and went, and I decided in last year, it's only been a little over a year, February 2023, I first started with DoorDash. I downloaded that app and started doing DoorDash, and
I guess first of all, sorry to hear about your husband. Again, that's to okay. to the audience too. Sorry to hear about the pandemic. what was it that actually made you? Because had you said like end of 2019, you decided to do DoorDash, but knowing that you were okay financially, what made it wait till the pandemic for you to go, I'll do this?
Because after the pandemic, I have some money that's invested somewhere, and it's kind of stalled things, the project that it's invested in, and I haven't been able to get at it. So financially, I wanted to do something, but I didn't want to go back to an office, and I just wanted more freedom. And so I said, I'm going to try this. And so I started with DoorDash. And
but it was the pandemic, so you were
that kind of
screwed. Were you already hearing how well people were being paid too? Is that part of it?
No, I hadn't really known much about how the pay structure was or anything. I just thought, well, this might be okay, you know, I can make my own hours, I can do, you know, what I want. So I didn't really know how the pay. I didn't know anyone who did DoorDash.
Okay.
Had you used it? Yeah, I had ordered on DoorDash
before.
And I ordered on shipped, like groceries and stuff. So
you were familiar with using the apps.
Yeah, I was familiar with using it, but I didn't know anyone personally who delivered other than my shipped delivery people that would deliver my shipped. Sometimes I'd have a regular person do that. But Yeah, so I just thought I'd give it a try.
So when, I mean, how far into the pandemic were we when you tried?
Oh, I didn't start.
Oh, you didn't try until about a year ago.
After.
First it was DoorDash. So you decided DoorDash. And a year, I'm trying to think of a year ago. So you actually came in at a time where that huge money was already gone anyway. And DoorDash, there's always been ways to make money for the most part on DoorDash. Now, we can talk about the last few months as a different animal altogether this year. But up until then, even with all of its ups and downs, there's always been a way to make it work if you really want to put it in. But it also depends where you live. And I say this all the time, you know, because people say to me like, hey, I'm only making half of what you can make in Denver. Okay, well, you live in Lincoln, Nebraska. Your cost of living is 20% of mine. So you're making way more than me if you're making half.
Yeah.
It's like,
cost of living is a big deal.
So it's not just always market to market's what I'm saying. It's not, you can't gauge a market by like, hey, I can only make half in. Yeah, but dude, half in Lincoln gets you, you can buy a house. I can't buy a house.
Yeah.
So if you can't just go off numbers, because you also have to look at like, this is, and for those that don't know, when I say Denver, Colorado, don't just think another city. It's not Albuquerque or something. Like, it's very, very expensive to live here now. I mean, it's next to California prices. No joke.
Whoa.
It's gotten crazy. Yeah. And I've been out here long enough to know that I used Albuquerque, because when I first moved out here in the late 90s, it was starting to grow. But, you know, it's night and day different now. And it's, you know, it's definitely feels like a much bigger city.
Yeah.
Than it did. So I still love it. It's still a great city. It's just very expensive. But getting into the, so the apps you've worked, you've done.
Which one? I started with DoorDash, and then I started hearing people, I didn't know anything about this multi-apping or anything. And I started hearing that people that did DoorDash did Uber Eats too. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to try that. So I added that on, and, I was doing them both, but, you know, Uber Eats isn't quite as good in my area as DoorDash. So I kind of mainly relied on DoorDash. And then I decided a couple months later I was going to do Instacart.
Okay.
And I only did a few orders on Instacart, and I said, this isn't for me. So that app sat for like a year. I had maybe 3 orders. But I've just recently started doing Instacart again.
Okay.
And now I've added a couple catering apps. I do deliver. Oh, I signed up for deliver that, but haven't been able to catch an order on that.
Are they in your market?
They're in my market. Yeah.
Okay. But well, because they're not in as many as like delivered. That's why I was asking.
I signed up for them, but the order will flash on my screen and off in a millisecond. It's gone.
Mm.
So I don't know about that. So then I got on delivered. I signed up for delivered and I was on a waiting list, and I finally got on that, and I've had a couple orders on that. And now recently I got on the Zifty catering app. Mm-hmm. That one's proven to be pretty good. I can pretty much, if I want, get an order every day. Some of them I don't want because the distance is too far, but it's been pretty consistent with orders.
Does Zifty do groceries too? I feel like I thought they did.
I don't know. All I've seen are catering. I don't know if they do groceries. I've kind of been liking the catering apps, and I'm starting to like Instacart more. So I'm kind of swaying a little bit away from the food delivery, the DoorDash and Uber Eats, and going more in that direction.
Yeah, and I want to hit on that catering thing, but before I do, I also wanted to get a feel for the size of your market. So what is the size of Cypress, or what are you adjacent to some huge city like Dallas or something?
Northwest suburb of Houston.
Okay, so we are monster market. Okay.
Yeah, so we're about 35 miles northwest of Houston, and the population in Cypress is around 200,000.
Oh, okay, for just Cypress.
Yeah.
So that's like the size of a small college town. So that's, I know, exactly. And then Houston's an extremely large town. So
right.
All right. So yeah, you got a lot of people. But yeah, going back to the catering apps, it's funny you mentioned that, because I did want to wanted to discuss, clearly everybody loves it on the podcast when I say this, I want to discuss a DoorDash a little bit. So are you in the large order program?
No, I haven't been able to get into it. I mean, okay. I was a Top Dasher for many months and I had all the stats and everything and never.
I was also meaning just had you ever been, but okay. You,
no.
Yeah, never in. Okay.
That's why I pursued some of these other catering apps because I don't know. It must be full. I'm guessing it must be full in my market or something.
Well, we have in the United States, and if you count InDrive, which is only in Miami, which is a great rideshare service, we only have really three operating rideshares. You know, we only have, for food delivery. Is it more than three? I mean, I know there's a couple small companies out there, but it's Grubhub, DoorDash, Uber Eats. I can't think of another one I'd want to put in the national feed. So, I mean, really, we only have six rideshare and food delivery apps. But I don't know how many people are aware that last year, seven very well catering apps launched. So more catering apps launched than rideshare and food delivery altogether.
There must be money in it.
Well, the thing was why did they all launch? Where was all the business going before? DoorDash. People didn't know where else to go. So customer wise, people were going to DoorDash going, you deliver food. I think that made them create the large order catering program. I've seen videos from like Nola Grind put out one last week. Like it must just be gone. I haven't seen any. And he used to see a bunch I have been saying for a long time that the LOP has been being dismantled big time because people have been burned. It's one thing when you're burned over ordering Chick-fil-A or something, you know, for a $6 meal. It's still aggravating as a customer. But what about if you're having a graduation party and you are counting on DoorDash to cater that event, a delivered style, $1,500 worth of food, blah, blah, blah. You know, and all of a sudden, even I've had Gary Middleton, you know, he's told me about times he's got to in Florida, he's got to the LOP order and it's only to find out he's the third driver to get there or that was assigned to it. At least he gets there and they're like, yeah, take it. And then it gets canceled and he ends up keeping all this food, like $1,000 worth of food. And I got to tell you, this is not how the other apps act. So I think what happened is DoorDash literally, I mean, first of all, if anybody listening has ever dealt with DoorDash, either on the customer or the driver side, you know, we are not dealing with good customer service at all.
No, not at all.
It's some of the worst out there. And I know a lot of the gig apps have this same problem. It is a problem, but DoorDash is just the worst. I think they almost do it to the point where they're like, hey, it's not how good was your experience on a rating. It's like, how bad was your experience? Cause they want it to be horrible. Cause they want you to go, I will never call again. Cause they still know you'll order. They still know you'll dash, but they don't want you calling. They'd rather just write it off. Well, I mean, I've had Chris Heffernan, the CEO of Delivered, on the podcast. We've had all these people on and I talked to them and a lot of their reasons for getting into this was exactly that the LOP was a joke. It was DoorDash trying to do catering space, which is not food delivery. Even if you're not setting it up, it's night and day different. I've had people say like, who was it that most recently said it? Cause I agree with it wholeheartedly. Like, don't just take an offer because it's $120 and you're like, sweet. Because what if it's a $3,000 offer? That's or $3,000 worth of food. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And now you actually just got yourself underpaid. Will it all fit in your car? Do you have the right amount of bags? So a lot of these apps not being fully transparent. I mean, how can the LOP ever have expected to win if they say, yeah, you got to take a picture that you have at least one big bag, but a lot of the orders go way above and beyond that.
My order that I had this morning for Zifty was like, I think I had three bags that I had of food. And I actually had another two bags in my car that I didn't need to use, but yeah.
Yeah.
So you do need, and I found out my little wagon I have was too small. So I'm like, oh, okay, now I need another piece of equipment that's bigger because the wagon is too small.
I mean, when I had Chris Heffernan on, the CEO of Delivered, we did it live, and there were some people in there going, hey, we know that if you buy Delivered bags and take pictures of those catering bags that you're getting priority. And he had to explain the whole priority program that no, that's not what we're doing. We're just selling you good catering bags. Cause he even was saying, listen, just take a picture of 5 catering bags. We don't care if they're ours. We just want to know you have 5.
Yeah. I don't have any Delivered bags. I just took a picture of my Deliver That bags, which I never got to use cause I couldn't get any orders. But,
right. So, but yeah, I think I don't know if there's a way for you to add it or whatnot, but I know that they do like to know that you have more bags. So I guess for the listeners too, like look into that. Let's see if you can add it in the app. If not, email them and say, hey, I have more catering bags.
Yeah. They send you a form and all you got to do is update your equipment.
So. Well, okay. So that's what I was asking. So you can't update it though.
Mm-hmm. Cause when I got the wagon, I'm like, oh, okay. Now I need to tell them I have this. So they know. That I've yeah. got, you know, I could take a larger order. So, but they sent me a little form and I just took a picture and upload it.
Well, because a lot, I mean, you know how it goes. People have come up with these theories and they make it that they're convinced that's the only way it can be. I'm just saying, I've seen it 1,000 times. They're like, Delivered does this because if you don't take Delivered pictures, like we're, and I know you just made that up in your head. that didn't come from anywhere. And so Chris was even on being very
their opinion.
Yeah, he was very, very honest. He's like, listen, he's like, honestly, we don't care. But we, unlike DoorDash, we do like to know you have the proper size bags, not just the proper size car.
Yeah, that you're going to keep the food in the right temperature and all that.
Yeah. I mean, again, these are high paying. People have to remember these are high paying offers or the most of the ones that you'd see on like Delivered and whatnot. Even if they're not 3,000, they're going to be $500 plus.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with bigger offers, Deliver That. I mean, that's why a lot of these, you know, are trying to take that market. And clearly there's much of a market there because while we're on that same, you know, so here's my thing about it. So with the volume on DoorDash dying off, we know it is. I mean, it might not be forever, but it's never going to go. I try and not be like negative. I'm just being a realist, not a pessimist, y'all. I'm just, it's never going to go back to those heights. Mm-mm. I mean, the best thing I think that we can hope on, and there's a lot of legislation that we're not going to discuss today, but in an upcoming episode, I do have Kim Cavan coming on and she doesn't even do gig work, but she's going to help me explain this with you guys because there's a lot of legislation coming that's looking at putting caps on the amount of vehicles that can be out in the market, just like the taxi industry, but with delivery and others too. So I honestly believe it's about the smartest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
In terms of a direction, most of the direction of increasing pay or this, it just never really makes sense to me. But this kind of does. Like, yeah, you should be capping markets. You should not let, it's not the old days where if Lyft had a car every 3 blocks, Uber for rideshare said, okay, put one every block. That used to happen. It's not like that anymore. Like the volume's down, so you don't have to oversaturate as bad as once happened.
Yeah.
But some of the legislation coming is looking at high, high fines to the company. Now, we as the drivers know that they're going to take those fines and they're going to test it for a while. And we also know as the drivers, we will suffer the brunt of it. As will the customers. We've now learned that the company doesn't care about the customers. They will raise the prices on the customers.
Yeah, they add fees and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, Sergio and I had my 300th podcast. My guest was Sergio. And we talked a lot of rideshare, but we did get into this space a little bit and mainly about some Prop 22 stuff. And he has been working on it. And we've been talking about it since then, is that potentially Prop 22, which was supposed to cost the company's money, potentially like Uber, at least maybe not the rest who has rideshare and the rideshare drivers aren't getting it. The way we broke it down, they're potentially the fee they're passing on to the customer could be making money on Prop 22. And to me, it's just, this is where the joke comes in. This is why I don't like those amounts. I don't like set amounts and dollars and because I don't think that that's going with inflation correctly anyway. That's not, you guys should want transparency. You should want, you know, you should want just Look, we live in a country where businesses are free to operate as long as they're doing so under the FTC and whatnot. So, I mean, the bottom line is, if they want to try and make money, okay, if they want to say every order pays a cent, I would hope nobody's taking the orders, but don't have acceptance rate and don't have metrics that judge me. Let me be a true independent contractor and pass on 1,000 and not be affected. If that's the case, I can't blame you. Let your business fail. That's not up to me. Yeah. But you do need to make it like that. But so with the volume dying off and with the prices going up and the offset, the highest saturation that the DoorDash platform has ever seen, to me, it's not surprising that DoorDash stepped into grocery space. I know they were doing, I don't know if they still are, but they were doing the package delivery for a while that Uber tried three different times that became known as Uber Drug Mule. Because in the Bay Area, anyway, gangs were sending sneakers, like tennis shoes with like cocaine in them. And they were doing this until this whole sting operation shut it all down. That was the first time Uber Connect existed. And then they brought it back. And then they brought it back a third time. I don't know. I know DoorDash tried it. I don't know if they're still doing it, but they were doing that too.
I've gotten a few package deliveries on DoorDash, but not many. I didn't accept them. Uber package deliveries are horrible. I mean, they want to pay like $5 to go 30 miles or, you know, just like they're a regular offer. So,
well, we
I don't know who's doing the Uber Connect deliveries.
So we had John Dash in Phoenix, Arizona do one, or we didn't have him. He did one. And he said that he had one that went to the post office and he was like, this was weird because I went there and I got three packages and the person just like here and put them in my trunk. And I went to the post office and mailed them. I'm like, so the drugs that were in the boxes have your face walking into the post office and delivering them.
Oh,
I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, no.
I mean, again, I'm always the guy taking it to the furthest extent. I'm just pointing out there's no saying it wasn't that.
Yeah, because there's no way that Uber's checking what the person's sending, so
no,
that'd be an easy way to have drugs transported.
Exactly, and when it came to a post office, I'm like, man, you're on federal property now.
Right. Like, now you're committing a crime, and you don't even know it.
I mean, yeah, and I'm sure a lawyer would help him get out of that in the early part of a trial. But my point is, why put yourself there for $5?
Right.
Because you would have to get a lawyer that would have to get you out of it. Who would? Who'd be like, dude, this is an Uber Eats thing where they did, I don't know. And I'm sure you'd be investigated anyway to make sure you had no affiliation with the people. But nonetheless, you know, they did the grocery space. That made sense. Package delivery, not so much. I know they've tried it before, but they've burned some bridges. I don't know what makes this space so tough, but I know they're trying to get back into beauty supplies. But even worse, this is blowing me away. And I sent you this article that they're trying to enter the last mile space, which is what I do a ton of, Curry and all this stuff. The B2B of Curry is much higher. It's like a top shelf compared to like a Well liquor that look like Rhodey is that has the cheaper ones. But at the same time, DoorDash now wants in on this. My thing, for anybody from DoorDash who potentially listens to this podcast, as we know that some people from some companies do listen in on these, I got to say, man, like, listen, instead of all these bad ideas, focus on your customer service. It really would change. It would be a game changer. And now there's a million things I could say, better pay for drivers, blah, 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 blah. But instead, I'm just going to say one thing today. Focus on your customer service. Because we all know customer service is where it all starts and ends. And everybody's failing at this. But DoorDash, you are in first place at failing at this.
Together. Nobody wants to be picking up a TV or a lawnmower for $2, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, just stick with your food delivery and make improvements where you need to. Like you said, customer service especially.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like it's because it reminds me of the LOP. Okay. You did the LOP. You actually probably started the thought of catering space. And then all the catering companies, just like as opposed to like local delivery companies, started saying, wait, why is this horrible company that can't handle their own logistics trying to get in on catering and they don't understand it and they don't make their drivers understand it? And it's a free for all. And so, and that's why I would go back to that Gary Middleton. That's not the only instance. That's just one that I know of from him. I know of others from him and others, but I mean, that was it was like an $1,100 order. There was a graduation party. And so somehow during the it getting canceled, he couldn't even find out to where it was. Gary's the type of guy who probably would have taken it anyway and said, "Hey, I know it got canceled, but you still want this?"
Yeah.
You know, because he understood this is a big order, but like then it gets canceled, it's gone, and he's calling. He's like, "Hey, I'll still," and what happened? "Oh, it just got canceled. Just keep it," or whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, "Did see, this is why you lost the game. Because if you can think you got people at a graduation party without food now, they're never, I mean, now they're never using you for anything."
Right. Yeah. You
and they're telling all their friends. You're going to get burnt on that one. So, but yeah, that's my beef with them. I think that stepping into the last mile space, there's, again, it's like catering. There's so many good last mile companies out there operating. Why do you need to get into this when nothing else that you're doing is perfected?
Right. Exactly.
I understand that the food delivery is down. So to me, it's always made sense to me that Uber Eats acquired Corner Shop, and that they have Shop and Pays, and that Walmart does. And it makes sense to me that DoorDash would want to get on that. But beyond that, when you're talking about delivering lawnmowers or some of the B2B stuff, plumbing supplies that I deliver, I also know that I don't want somebody stacking plumbing supplies next to my Grubhub food order you're taking.
Right, right.
You know, yeah. I'm just saying, like, I don't know what these drivers are doing. That's so you're funny. When you start, I mean, like Curry would never allow that. They would never let me. I mean, it's even in there. I can multi-app and I don't have an AR. So all the things are there for full transparency, but I can't do a job while I'm doing a Curry. They don't want you taking on another job. So no stacking is kind of their thing, you know? And to me, it's fine. Obviously I do enough where I make better money doing it that way. So it works for me.
Yeah.
But that kind of moves me. So this I also wanted to talk about because I saw the article and I was like, gosh, this is going to, it blows my mind when they talk about it, because we always get the articles from the BBC or something over in Europe. And it makes me wonder, I know our news isn't the best about reporting on things, but whenever these articles run, I always search for them to be running on any paper in the States. And it's hard to find them, but this is another one about facial recognition. And I have some problems with it. I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at the article or whatnot, and if you have first thoughts.
I looked at it.
I mean, what were your thoughts on it? Because we're talking about like there being some basically bias.
Yeah. It's crazy that in this day and age with the technology that they could not perfect that facial recognition so that it wasn't going to be like, I don't know. It just should be a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, or like you said earlier, like don't put it out there if you don't have it perfected.
Yeah. Or if it is some kind of beta thing, just let people know that and let the drivers know that, hey, if you don't pass it, maybe you have a 5-PIN personal code. Yeah. And they can at least say, hey, it for some reason it didn't catch you right. Please enter your code or something.
Fingerprint or even like fingerprint.
Whatever, just something that goes back up before, because the way it is now, they just can be deactivated or get in trouble. They can lose money. They can. And so, I mean, we have a stat here that is, you guys can go back to some of the first podcast episodes that I was doing. I had a guy, Morad, on from London, and I've also had Gig Guy Grant and some others on. I've had Atlanta Delivers. So I'm fairly familiar with their market as well. And I got to say that we learned that it was either end of 2020 or beginning of 2021, the Microsoft software being used by Uber Eats was working at a 70% level. So people of color, women, if it was dark out, like factors that are like, really, those are kind of important. it made it operate at 70%. So now I had to go look it up. I had to go find it for myself. They are close. They're at 79% effective. But to me, I was saying this before we started to Sheila, We have, at least me, I can't think of any of my apps except for Curry, and I wouldn't be surprised if they had it too. But all of the apps that I use in my arsenal, every one of them has facial recognition. Now, how often and whatnot it makes me do it, it doesn't matter. It's still been deployed. So I have it on every app I have. And if it's operating at 80%, like, here's the thing. Why is there no article about that here? Why am I having to find it over in the BBC and other ones? You know, because over there, they're dealing with court cases that surround this. So it does make the news. There's no way to avoid it. But here it's like, you know, we'll have 50 articles on, you know, something stupid about Uber or one of these platforms that runs for a couple days. And it's like, this is the biggest news, when really this kind of news is going on. I mean, we're running facial recognition program software from Microsoft. We know this, especially Uber Eats. I'll pick on them this time because often it's DoorDash, but Uber Eats, we know that we're using it here too. I've had to do it on mine. And we know that it's operating at 79%. So I guess I wonder, like, anybody having issues with Uber Eats? If you are, make sure to send me an email, steve@rideshare-rodeo.com.
That kind of blows my mind that a tech company, you know, was putting something out there that they should be able to do way better than that. 79, yeah. You know, that's just not acceptable.
I mean, and that gets to the point of, when you say tech company, obviously we're not talking about Uber. We're talking about Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly.
Microsoft is, we always joke about these companies calling themselves tech companies, but now we're talking about Microsoft. They are a tech company. Right, they should get this right.
Exactly.
I mean, it really does bother me. And it bothers me that we don't talk about this kind of stuff because, you know, it's happening. Like, I got to think maybe we have a different way in the United States of the emails you receive if, like, you don't pass it. Over there, they're very aware of the problem. So they know, oh, that was a facial recognition problem. Yeah. Maybe they're doing some other way of, like, coming at you if they don't think you're matching up here in the States, so they don't have those same problems.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, hey, because all they have to do is do one of those emails they send out that says, hey, we suspect suspicious activity. We've all heard of these, if not got them. And if you get one of those, you are now unable to use the platform until you get an email that says otherwise. You can try and take all the paths, but they don't always lead to an answer. Sometimes just time fixes it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, it is crazy. I know people on DoorDash and Uber Eats who basically don't know it, but go into long-term timeout. It does. Like, I've had people go and finally at a point they're giving up on it. Like, my account must be dead. 2.5-3 months later, they're put back on. They had stopped even following up.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, that happened to Nova Dasher.
You that's know, right. He was kicked off DoorDash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then he went through he even did it on his videos. He showed people. He was walking through the steps of doing everything as you should. Yeah. And I was talking to him during the process. He was taking everything to the extreme and doing it daily, following up. Hey, I didn't hear back. He finally gave up. And it was like 3 weeks after he'd given up where they're like, you're reactivated. It was almost like, hey, you stopped bothering us. Now you can be reactivated.
Whereas Flight, they put him in a timeout chair and said, yeah, okay, exactly. 2 months, we'll reactivate you, but we're not going to tell you that.
Yeah.
Or something. I don't know. That's crazy.
But why would you do that? Nova, at that point, Nova was, I think he was just shy of 30,000 deliveries.
I don't know.
Why would you do that to a 30,000 delivery driver?
Because they probably wanted to put a new driver on or something. Who knows?
I get the thing about putting a lot of new drivers on in the oversaturation and getting rid of some of the people who might have a bad attitude. But this is somebody who has a great attitude and has done almost 30K. That's not somebody you put on your hit list.
Yeah.
That's somebody you count on to be out there in case all the newbies are screwing up.
And he never got any kind of notification why they deactivated him. It wasn't like they suspected fraud or anything that he had to prove he didn't do.
Well, what he knew, so he thought it was weird the way it happened because he dashed on a Saturday. I actually remember this. He dashed on a Saturday. He got the email on Tuesday And he was trying to figure out from his, because he said he was multi-apping. He only did like three dashes that day. And he's like, they all seem to go well unless somebody just called me in for no reason. But when he got the deactivation said it was for one of his dashes done on, and they gave a date, and the date was Sunday. That Sunday, it was his son's birthday. He didn't even work.
Oh, my God.
So that was his first email. I didn't even work this day. My app wasn't even turned on. Like, he didn't even turn it on to check it. It was never turned on that day. And they were saying, on this day, you committed a violation. We've had to deactivate you. He said, weird, because I didn't even turn the app on.
Man.
Really, because so his whole fight was, company. You know, I mean, that, see, to me, I even, in a conversation off camera, I even told him, I said, maybe that's what did it. Maybe you were in like a 5-day timeout and they saw you say that and they're like, make it 2 months. Make this guy learn a lesson to not bother us. Again, going back to customer service, which we've kind of been talking about throughout. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. This is just not, I mean, again, this is a dasher and we expect they'll treat us worse than a customer, but it's not like they treat customers much better these days.
Yeah.
I mean,
I was yelling at the DoorDash app the other day because I delivered this pizza. I picked up a pizza order from Little Caesars, delivered it to the customer to find out they left two of her pizzas off the order. They didn't give me the whole order. So I'm calling DoorDash. And, you know, when you're a top dasher, you have a special number you can call and they take your call right away. But when you're just a regular person, you get the automated system. And if you don't have their canned response or you can't pick one of their canned responses, it's hard to get to a person. So I'm yelling at the phone in my car, speak with a customer service representative, speak with, I must have done that 20 times. Finally, they connected me with a customer service representative, but it was ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, a lot of those first, even that, at that point, I always question how much can that person do for you? Because it matters who you get connected to.
Right, but I wanted to call because I wasn't sure, like, really what, I never had that happen. I wasn't sure what to do. Do I need to go back to the restaurant and get the pizzas? Or do I tell them to cancel the order? She was really annoyed. She was kind of real snippy with me. And so anyway, I come to find out that the order was ordered through Little Caesars and then shipped out to DoorDash for delivery. So they said, no, we can't do anything. She's got to cancel the order. And then go to, you know, and I'm like, okay. Yeah, she wasn't too happy about it.
So Little Caesars has a DoorDash account that they're using to ship it out?
Well, I guess it's same like Pizza Hut. If they don't have a driver to deliver it, they can send it to DoorDash for delivery.
Right. Yeah. I've been places where I've opened Uber Eats and I've seen like things that in my area you can't, or like they have their own delivery, so you don't need it, but it'll be on the app. Even in a promo, you know, it's like Domino's. I'm like, what?
That's crazy.
You know, it's like, why is Domino's on there? We have 30 Domino's drivers in my market. Yeah. And Domino's cars, like.
A lot of pizza places around here, for some reason, they have a shortage of drivers. So we get a lot of Pizza Hut orders and stuff and Little Caesars. So they probably just didn't have a driver that day to.
So I'm looking at the time. I think we have time for this, for one more topic. And I really wanted to hit on this because yes, we're talking about Seattle, but it really does affect everybody. And I think we've started talking about a lot of legislation and stuff and what's going on, but I think this is a good look at how something failed big, because a year ago they said that rideshare drivers should be under the TLC in Seattle. And Sergio and I were watching the model. It made sense actually. How can you argue that rideshare doesn't belong in the TLC? Because the Taxi Limousine Commission, I worked for a limo company as a freelancer for a couple of years. I don't see why Uber and Lyft wouldn't be on there, to be honest. This is just me. I mean, maybe a lot of people have reasons, but I mean, it doesn't involve unions. It's not more money, but like, why wouldn't they? It's protections. It's things like but even if you're against the TLC kind of thing and how limousines and taxis are handled, it still makes sense to me, at least, that rideshare would be put under that same scrutiny. Right. I can live with that. But why did Seattle say, hey, okay, it's working for the rideshare drivers, let's do this for the for the food delivery workers too, because Sergio and I thought it was a good idea for rideshare. When it happened, we both said, this is going to fail like nobody's business. So in January, this came out, this new 26 something minimum wage in Seattle for gig workers. And everybody was so stoked. They're like, dude, this is going to be the best market ever. Like, we're going to rage this. And all of a sudden, they did what they did in New York. They throttled drivers. But more than anything, they added a line fee to the customer saying, hey, this is the Seattle City Council new fee, and we're passing it along to you. You pay it, because they're making you, the customer, pay it. It was almost like it almost helps the companies too, because they get to say, hey, your city did this to you. Yeah. So it's not, at first you might think, people might think like, dude, wouldn't that sound bad on them? I think in the long run, it sounds bad on the city, because they're just passing it along as, look at this new regulatory fee. But they also took advantage of that timing to raise prices on restaurants. And yeah, they probably would have with time anyway, but they took advantage of that to raise it more than they would have. So they raised the prices, hurt the restaurants. They're actually in a position where I think even in a town like Seattle, they're willing to say, dude, we'll make it break even. And just to show you guys to stop this. So I'm not saying don't fight, but the fights need to make sense. You know, like that's why I think I don't have a blueprint for it, but why I think a cap on cities is the best start. You know, don't let more than X amount of drivers be out. Yeah. That way you're not interfering with their business either. You're just making sure they're not abusing powers and having way more people out there than can make money.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm more for things like that, but I got to look at it. And, you know, I mean, like there was a time Instacart was supposed to be paying. Now they paid $750 million, or was it 750 million? Maybe. I don't even know. Maybe it was even 750 million. I would have to look that up, but they just had to pay that violation over the sick leave policy that was put in place. And if you're not familiar with that, in 2020, they put for 4 years, they said, and it just ended. That's why, like it literally just ended, and they're being sued for Instacart for not paying some of this. But what it said was, if you made one Instacart delivery into the city of Seattle or from the city of Seattle, so if you picked up at a supermarket in Seattle, and even if you took it outside of Seattle to deliver it or brought something into Seattle, either way, one in a month, you got one free work day, full work hour day, paid sick leave day for one delivery per month for 4 years. So the Instacart was we can't wait for this to be over. Yeah. But I guess along the way, they didn't pay some of these sick days out. And now they got to pay like all these. Let's see if I can see the number just on this link. If I can't, you guys will have to look it up, but I think it was a lot. Paid sick time. Yeah. I don't know. I don't see it in here, but oh, 730,000. Yeah. Okay. So just $750,000 out to Instacart drivers. And that's the ones who filed. Imagine how many have quit and didn't file.
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't, I mean, there's probably 10 times that out there is what I'm saying. Cause a lot of people have just left. But I guess my point becomes like this kind of stuff scares me, because I've already seen that it's coming to a lot of places. And I'm sure that you, Sheila, feel safe because you're in Texas. You think you'll be the last state to be hit. But here's how I kind of agree with the statement that Texas won't, it is, you know, it probably would be the last to be hit. But what does that mean? Even if it's the last to be hit with legislation, if they're paying legislation out in 15 other states, where do you think they take it from? Take it from the drivers around the country in different ways. Exactly. I guess my point is we all pay.
Right.
Like any state that's going to have legislation, if you're like, not my state, it is your state. It's just covered up. You're still going to pay. Cause I mean, we know any company that would, not only is customer service so bad, but the fact that you would take regulatory fees and stuff and go, you know what? These are supposed to punish us. We'll just pass it on to the customer. The fact that the number one rule of business that I always knew was customer comes first, customer service.
Yeah.
Customer service sucks. Now they'll punish the customer who just simply wants to order food.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's crazy.
I don't know what else to say about it. It really blows my mind that it's come to this.
I wonder some of these restaurants, you know, that are on DoorDash and stuff, like if they just left the app and started hiring their own drivers, like it used to be, you know, when you ordered food to be delivered from Pizza Hut or whatever, the Pizza Hut driver would bring it or whatever restaurant had. Wonder if they would, if they just did that, went back to doing it themselves instead of paying DoorDash all these fees to do it. I think
the problem becomes, and you can probably like just think of a restaurant that you know in your area where that's like, gosh, this one doesn't belong on DoorDash. It's so good. And with the way DoorDash performs, it shouldn't be on there. Think if they did their own, you know, the cost and like how DoorDash would undercut them. Like DoorDash would make it, I feel like they'd almost make it so like what they're hoping to gain from it, they wouldn't ever see their deliveries. Somehow DoorDash would bury it. And make it so
that would be something they would do because they're such a sketchy company.
Yeah. I mean, even if it was just allowing like for the first month that you were operating, and if it's a big restaurant, like that they make sure all the restaurants around you are doing 2-for-1s every night or something on the DoorDash app. So you're just using it because you're accustomed to it. All of a sudden the launch goes horrible. They have a lot of tricky ways to make things fail.
Yeah, that's true.
And this is why I'm always skeptical of this because I think that Minneapolis is about to face this too on May 1st, you know, unless they come to an agreement. There's a lot of people who think that the companies coming into Minneapolis when Uber and Lyft leave will be able to handle the volume. I think that a lot of people forget that we did already see this. We've never seen this before. Yeah, we did. Uber and Lyft were kicked out.
They did it in Austin.
I was just going to say that. Uber and Lyft were kicked out of Austin. And at the time, even, the timing actually seemed right because there were three good other ride shares in Austin that were operating. So everybody had this thought of, even I did, hey, maybe these companies will do good because they're gone. It actually hurt the companies a lot more with Uber and Lyft gone.
Yeah.
Because people just stopped using rideshare. Like I think before it was like they'd use those third party or those off brand ones because they'd go look at the pricing and be like, oh, I'll try one of those other ones because it's too much. But without Uber and Lyft there, they just kind of stopped. And then it ended with the city begging Uber and Lyft to come back.
Yeah.
And that's my fear in Minneapolis. So like those that think that there's a solution because there's a driver's co-op and there's Hitch. Again, Hitch really... I'm not going to diss on it, guys, because I don't know enough about it. I know it operates primarily in Africa, and it also operates in Canada. But the fact they're coming to Minneapolis scares me because it reminds me of Trip, and Trip was a pyramid scheme. You know, Hitch wants you drivers to pay $200 a month or $9.95 a day to be on their platform driving rideshare. And you keep all the money, but you have to pay that. And what happened with Trip was... you paid that and you'd see an offer a week. One, they didn't have the customer base to supply anything.
Yeah. That's a scary idea.
Yeah. And so that's what people are saying. Well, there's some companies coming in, there's Move and there's Hitch but Hitch already is worrying me as a pyramid scheme. A driver's co-op means union. So you're not going to you're already going to make less money than you did with Uber and Lyft in the first place. If there's a union involved, and then Move, I'm just not real sure that they've ever had a market. I don't think they have that ability. But then we looked at the cost too, and it was like they said to start a rideshare company in Minneapolis, so they specifically targeted that city, is approximately $200,000 plus a $41,000 TNC license for the year. For the company. So 250 grand to start to get you operational for a year. But if you're not doing good, you have to have more operational money. So really, I don't think 250,000 is the, or whatever, is it 250,000? I don't think that is the amount. I think the amount's closer to double that. And that's even skimming by. That's saying we might make it a year.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, honestly, like my fear is that I saw that Uber and Lyft combated the numbers and they kind of met them halfway, but that's still not good enough, but it's still better pay than most markets for rideshare drivers. And I'm not siding with the companies. I think they've done a lot of wrong and they've taken advantage of things. It's what companies do. But I'm not siding with them, but I'm also saying don't overplay your hands. Because if you kick them out, you might find yourself without any work for a while it all plays out. And even then, you might find yourself, when you do have work again, back on Uber and Lyft because they've now been invited back to the city.
Yeah. I think they'll be invited back.
Or they won't leave. I mean, it's May 1st is the date. This happened in California with Prop 22. It was done at, Gary and I joke about this often, it was done at 11, and I always say 11:59, but I think it was like 5-6 minutes before. It was like 11, we'll call it 11:55. 11:55 p.m. On the final day before they had to pay the AB5 violation money, they threatened to leave. And it was like 5 or 6 minutes before midnight when the state said, never mind, we'll allow you to have a Prop 22 ballot on the November vote in 2020 and let them pause and not pay it, gave them an instant carve out without voting on it in California. I mean, it was like they bowed down to them because Uber and Lyft knew in California without us, you don't, it's not even that people have the option of public transportation. There's now enough people who rely on Uber Lyft. There isn't enough public transportation to get the people to work.
Yeah.
So if Uber Lyft shut down, it's like, it's such a big place, California. There would be, they were saying it would cause mass disruption and people getting to work and stuff.
Yeah.
So it gave them an upper hand. And of course they just sat there probably going, we're not bending. We're not. And they're like, well, you got to bend a little. No, we're not bending. And then and it came down to, okay, we'll just turn it off in 5 minutes. And they're like, no, never mind. And that's my fear. Don't overplay the hand. If you don't have a hand, don't overplay it. Don't try and bluff with these companies.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like, they're, you know, it's going to take some innovative solutions, but they can't just be these like, hey, let's find the crap out of them. Because they seem to always beat you, the states, the legislators, whatever, at finding ways around it. And the fact that we've now seen them not care about their customers, I mean, that's sad. So, I think that, I don't know, let's end it with this. So with you in your market over the year you've been doing it, when you came in and it doesn't matter which apps you were doing or if you were multi-apping, but with the hours you put in, how are you doing year to year? And have you picked up more hours, or are you working hours you don't want to work because they're better? Have you changed things, or are you making the same amount? How does it go for you without even, it doesn't matter which apps, just.
Yeah, I've seen a decline, you know, with probably both Uber and DoorDash over the year. Like I said, I was kind of loyal to DoorDash for a long time, and I didn't use Uber much. But recently, I've been starting to use Uber more, and I got on doing more Instacart and some catering. So I think I'm doing better now with the same amount of hours. I work maybe 12 to 15 hours a week.
So if you did, but if you did the same 12 to 15 with just DoorDash,
yeah, I wouldn't be doing as good.
I mean, a lot worse or just noticeably?
Probably, I make 2/3 of what I'm making now. I mean, it's a big difference. Like when orders used to pay, like I'd say, like $7, $7.50 are now paying $5.50, $6.
Yeah.
So that, you know, with the decrease in base pay and people are tipping less, you know, culture people are getting tired of tipping, and they used to tip a lot better in my market, but there's not anymore.
Yeah, Lou, from the Long Island Dash Experience, and I have actually looked up articles. It's actually called tip fatigue.
Yeah.
There's actually a thing, and it's actually happened throughout time, so it's not just gig related, but right now. It's some of the heaviest tip fatigue ever that we're feeling. Like he was even saying, we did a live stream together. And before we get out of here, I'll mention this because I haven't done it. I've mentioned it in a while because it was one of the most off things I've ever heard, but I understood it. So him, Mary, and I were doing one of our streams, and he said, well, here's my thought to all of the people using DoorDash and Uber Eats. Delete the app today. You can't afford it. I was like, okay. I mean, again, probably a lot of those, the customers aren't listening, but he had a very strong theory behind it. You know, people were getting pandemic money. People were told to stay at home. People were, they developed bad habits with it, you know, and now they still have those habits, but they can't afford it.
Right. Exactly.
And so he said, where does it first leave from? Tips. Cause they're still going to try and get by with their habit, but the only place that they have an option to skip is tips.
Exactly.
And he said, next it'll be that they start realizing they can't afford it. And that'll be a whole different thing. And so, I mean, I heard him. I don't think everybody needs to delete the apps. I think that everybody, maybe a lot more customers need to express concern about, because now you guys have something to express concern about too, not just us drivers. The amounts should bother you. And by that, I'll give you guys a tip. Go look at the menu of any restaurant you order from on DoorDash or Uber Eats online and see the price difference on each item that you're buying, because they cost a lot more through the platforms.
Right.
And then there's the fees. So, I mean, really, the fees aren't the fees. The fees are a lot more because you're paying on each item too.
Plus, some people just automatically assume the fees go to the drivers.
Yeah, no. But I mean, the menu price item should be a big tip to people, because they're not like a nickel and dime anymore. I know menu price items that are $2 different for a $13 item.
Yeah.
So you can just go. I mean, like, if you love a place and you occasionally get it on DoorDash and you really aren't, you just don't pick up when that the check is that much more on DoorDash because you think it's the fees, I would say go look online next time you order on DoorDash and look against it. Every one you're going to find a lot higher. But that's a wrap for this week. If you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, please email me at steve@rideshare.com. I want to thank my awesome guest, Sheila, and don't forget to check out her channel on YouTube, Dashing in Cyprus, which can be found in the podcast notes. So until next week, be safe, earn smart, and be good to each other, y'all. Peace. I'm a mile away.